We're plugged in, can you feel it? It news, we're gonna reveal it. From the servers to the cloud, we're breaking it down, showing you how.
Tech trends, what the edge, pulse check. That's what we pledge, keeping you updated. Never miss a beat in the IT industry. We can't be beat. Analytics, data's the key. Unlocking insights, setting you free. Cybersecurity, we your shield, protecting your info.
Hello and welcome to the Pulse Check Podcast. Today we're going to talk about the history and observability. We all have a little bit of experience in that over the years, so we'd like to kind of share where we've been, where we are, and I think where it's going. And just to kind of kick it off for the three of us here, my name's Dennis Milholm. I've been in the space, say, 20-some-odd old man years. And from observability back in the day where it was a ping check to where we are today, it's been quite the journey. So I'm looking forward to talking about some of that on my side of it. And I'll pass it off to one of the co-hosts here, Kirk, if you'd like to go through a little on yourself.
Yeah, before I jump in, make sure y'all like and subscribe. Like, that matters, right? But yeah, no, like Dennis said, my name is Kirk. Been in the field for over 15 years. Can't believe it, but what they say. Say it here. Same thing. I remember running scripts to make sure we could ping machines. And when it came back up, we're good. When it went down, we were running around trying to figure out what cables were missing and or pulled out and what have you, right? So, yeah, so it's going to be an interesting conversation today. Excited about it, and I'll swing it over to our other co-hosts.
Hello, everybody. I got similar background to all these guys. Back in the day, I think we did the scream test, right? You'd open the door and just see who yelled and be like, oh, finance is down, or someone's got a problem over in, you know, whatever department it was. So not as sophisticated as a ping check, but we got it done either way. But I've been in the industry probably a little less than 15 years. So I think probably the more recent of the group, but nonetheless, just happy to share what I've seen so far in my time in the industry and talk a little bit about observability, or more importantly, I guess it hasn't always been observability, right? I mean, it was just monitoring for the longest time, and then we kind of pivoted to this new nomenclature of observability.
Yeah. Great. It's architecture, if you ask me.
It's anything, right? I mean, anything that people can latch on to, generative AI, observability, right? Lift and shift, all these terms that people like to throw out.
Yeah, all of it.
I love when I get on a phone call with a customer and the AE or somebody's like throwing out all these terms, and the guy's like, doesn't mean anything to me. It's just marketing fluff. Like,
yes, exactly. The configurator goes to the, it's like, no.
The retro encabulator from Rockwell Automation, right?
Well, that's exactly it. And right, when you talk about observability, when we started looking at stuff like this, it was literally you were observing. It was you had eyeballs on a screen is really all it was. And it's funny you mentioned the two that come to mind is when you talk about opening up a door and seeing if finance is down. I actually did once receive a phone call getting yelled at. It says, how come you didn't answer my email that our Exchange servers were down? There's no answer to that, right? We've all gotten that. But where I really started was a tool, I mentioned it before, called Big Brother. If you remember that one, also known as BB, it literally was a green, yellow, red dot, and a purple if it was not accessible. And that was it. And it was for maybe eventually got to CPU, to memory, and a couple of other things. But that was the tool. It ran on Perl. It was all shell and CGI scripts and stuff like that. I mean, it was written by, Sean McGuire. it was just some guy in the community who ended up writing it with another guy, Robert, as well. But we used it for years. for enterprise level monitoring. So that was just our observability. And of course, like you said, it's more marketing or anything than it is now.
But you know what? Those green lights still to this day make people feel good.
Yeah.
Regardless if they actually mean anything, they still want to see the checkbox and the green light.
Agreed. It's so funny you say that because I remember, man, at the very beginning of my career, when I remember back in 2012, anyone knows Hurricane Sandy hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, like, we didn't have a data center. We just had like a room in headquarters that we called our server room that had its independent AC. So we called it, a data center, quote unquote. So I'll never forget the night before the hurricane hits. We suddenly were having this DR planning call, which is entirely too late.
It's a great time to have
that. Entirely too late. And we're trying to figure out, hey, what are we going to do? How are we going to, mitigate any, data loss, blah, blah, blah. Lo and behold, 12 hours later after the, storm passes over, man, we were set into the dark ages. Like, the city where our headquarters was didn't have power for, 2 weeks. So, in our headquarters, we hosted the entire company. This is a global company, mind you. It was, 1,000 employees.
Oh, my God.
The company's entire email system was in our headquarters. Oh, my goodness. Email is probably the biggest thing that I was like, oh, my gosh. We're getting calls, and I'm like, can't do it. Once people realize that we got hit by the hurricane, they're like, hey, are you okay? Everything's fine? Great. When will email be back up? All right. So that was my intro into monitoring. I was like, we need to be ahead of this kind of stuff. And it was a painful learning experience, really painful for the entire tech team. Like, I remember driving 3 hours to the nearest data center trying to rack all this equipment to get the company back online, right? So, so observability, right? Observing or, really being proactive. That's what I've always seen it as, right? And it's interesting how all these years later, I still see folks making the same exact mistakes that we made.
I mean, you think about, back in the day where you're talking about Big Brother and things like that, that was purely what was monitoring, right? It was, let me know that something was wrong. That was all its job was, right? It didn't need to tell you what was wrong. It didn't need to tell you the specifics of what was wrong, just that there was a problem.
Yep.
Now we've kind of shifted, especially with containers and SaaS and cloud and all those other things. It's more about tell me that it's wrong before it happens and why it's going to take something down, right? The observability phrase is more around understanding the why behind why something's broken.
Yeah.
No, and very true.
And to go on that, I think a lot of it has to do because there's all these, there's so many platforms and tools out there that are charging for observability, right? So all those years ago, we were using freeware, right? I remember we were using Nagios back then, and it was just ping, man. You had to create your own monitoring in that platform, right? And it's funny to see even how Nagios has grown as a platform itself all these years later, right? Now they're charging. I'm like, what? Right, so started off as free, and now they're observability is a thing. So telltale signs.
No, it's true. And I know for myself, I mean, starting with Big Brother, and then I think it went to, What's Up Gold, I think it was. And then and then there was a little jump into What's Up Professional. There was some mom, love that name, Microsoft Operations Manager. We did that one for a while. There was NIMSOFT was out there. There was so many different tools that as observability changed, some tools either didn't grow with it, didn't move with it, or you needed visibility it didn't provide. So if they didn't grow, you moved on, right? You had to jump over to some other tools. So it was more trying to find something that provided you a number of different angles, like, kind of like the Swiss Army knife of monitoring. That's what we were always looking for. It needs to do everything either pretty well, or a couple of, you had to get a bunch of tools that did their things extremely well. And then you start that observability conversation of, and I have stolen this from you so many times, Steve, the expression of the swivel chair mentality, right? Oh, yeah. It's like, I'm going to go look at this tool that does traces like no one else. I'm going to switch over to this tool that does Citrix better than anybody else. And it just, you can observe, you have observability, but your time is lost in this switching between, right? So it was more, how do you find a tool that does everything well enough to give you what you need, right? And that, boy, I didn't really get into actual what we're calling observability today until probably only 6 years ago. Really starting to look at that. I'm not sure how long ago you guys would consider having real vision into what's going on in an environment when that really kind of hit its stride.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I think that started for me like 7-8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Where it moved from just monitoring to enterprise monitoring, right? The ability to monitor an entire enterprise, mm-hmm. right? And the whole gist of it was moving away from monitoring subsets of your infrastructure and environment into like trying to get a handle onto everything, right? That collapsing and consolidating of time frames, trying to figure out what's going on, right? So, but mm-hmm. it's interesting to see like how many, like, so how different solutions out there try to approach, you know, that problem, because I think that's a problem that still exists today. With that being said, question to you guys, do you think there's a best way to get observability across like an entire environment? Especially with like the complexities, right? So before it was all data center stuff, right? Now there's mm-hmm. a mix, right? There's data center, there's cloud, software defined networking, right? There's just, it's expanded quite a bit. How do you guys see any best practices or the best way to accomplish that view today?
I think in all fairness, it really depends on the type of company that you're talking about. Like if I worked at, you know, a company, I think we talk about it a little bit, right? I mean, we put, you know, as a sales engineer, we put customers in like categories of what type of customer they are, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have your category one customer that's like all on-prem, hasn't really adopted cloud. They're, you know, your traditional infrastructure monitoring. Their type of observability is a lot easier to achieve because that type of scenario has been around for a long time, right? Then you have your lift and shift folks that starting to go into the cloud, especially now with Broadcom and all the other stuff happening where people are looking at alternatives to things like VMware. That now you're dispersed, right? You got some stuff in the cloud, maybe you have multiple cloud providers, you have multiple data centers. Tying that all together now becomes more of a challenge. And that obviously, as you walk that ladder further to the right, where now you're like, you know, super DevOps shop, everything's containers, and you know, we got Terraform mm-hmm. and all the stuff we were just talking about, Kirk, right? That like becomes almost, you need to have a team dedicated to observability, because the benefits that you gain from like moving to things like containers and, you know, microservice architecture and all this stuff, they come at a cost of complexity, right? So you have,
100%.
You know, we can move really quickly and we're very agile and we can develop shit really quick, but at the same time is now 1,000 times harder to troubleshoot because there's the infrastructure team, there's the application folks, there's the intermediate layer between the network and the hypervisor, right? All these other things that you now have to have visibility into, whereas before it was like, it's on my ESXi host and it runs a VM and, you know, great. I got those two things covered. We're golden. So it depends. I think depending on how sophisticated you are, you're closer to achieving full observability. I don't think for those very right side folks, right? The folks that have kind of cutting edge. I don't think we're there yet, right? There's still kind of purpose-built tools that do certain things really well. And because that area is so large to cover in terms of like APM, infrastructure, network, cross-cloud network, right? You have these point tools that are very good at their niches that are never going to beat all-in-one tool.
Right.
Right. Because there's just so much real estate to cover.
Yeah.
So then you get into like the integration play or the MOM of, you know, monitor of monitors, right? Can we suck this stuff into a tool and start to do stuff with it? That's where I think we're headed. And I don't want to take all the talking points. So I'll turn it over to Dennis.
No, you talk away, man, because obviously you're more significantly knowledgeable than I am. And then we can delete this part of the VOD later. Mm-hmm. So I think I think that's all very true. The point tools will always exist and they should exist to do what they do as well as they do. And to your point, complementing those all-in-one tools. I think the all-in-one tools are necessary. Maybe I'm biased, maybe not. But I think that, again, cutting down the swivel chair and using all of that observability and correlation and all that stuff you can get in a single soup makes the most sense. But I think one other piece that is very difficult to find, especially with the level of complexity you're talking about there. And I mentioned this book last time, The Phoenix Project. It was actually, there's actually a book group where we work, where we talk about it. We have like, meetings to discuss what we learned from it. But not only is it the increased complexity and efficiency, it's understanding its impact on the business side. Yeah. To be able to understand what outage might be, appears insignificant, how that may impact something more on the customer side being significant, having the observability at the business level on how that impacts, or the other way around, really, how the complexities that we're getting and monitoring that we're seeing of that complex level, how that impacts the business. To be able to provide that kind of observability is really, really, really where the strength of whatever tool you go with is, because if you know that, great, this Kubernetes pod is having an issue, I mean, that might be a whole lot of whoopity-doo with all of your replications and everything that you have. However, is that one that's critical to the business that might be impacting somebody? So providing those kind of values observability, I think you don't see a whole lot of companies doing that right now. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
I mean, with that being said, do you think it's like, it's really possible to achieve that? Because, all right,
it's hard.
Let's be honest. Cause everyone says they're they're monitoring or, you know, providing observability into key business critical applications. You know the song and dance, but mm-hmm. Is it true? I know we kind of sell in this area a little bit. But like, is it true? I'll never forget. So in a past life, selling enterprise monitoring, I'll never forget. I had the toughest call of my career. Customer said, "Hey, just had an outage. Help me find it." Because we were monitoring, you know, the environment. And man, we spent hours looking through the weeds and trying to figure out, hey, look, this thing here, manually correlating. Like, mm-hmm. what does this really, this abstract metric mean in the grand scheme of things? Right. But, how, you know, do you think it's really possible that solutions can really take all of these metrics and data and say, hey, this correlates to this, this correlates to that, and this is affecting this, which ultimately means loss of revenue?
I think it's going to be very hard this fully solve that issue. What I think we will get closer and closer to is at least figuring out how to use the data that we've collected in a much more streamlined fashion, right? And what I mean by that, right, obviously, you look at, you know, metrics, you have logs, you have traces, you have other sorts of signals that you can get to help you figure out what's going on. The more that tools can use that to its advantage to help cut down on the, to Dennis's phrase, right, the swivel chair mentality, I think we become more efficient at solving problems and predicting things. But I don't think we ever are able to fully say we have, like, it solved, right? I don't think it's a moving goalpost, right? We never solved monitoring because it evolved into observability. And observability will eventually evolve into, you know, some sort of AI-based monitoring, you know, platform with automation and media. It's just going to be a moving goalpost. We'll just get more efficient at using the data to make better decisions, I think, in the long term.
No, I think you're right. And I think I wouldn't be surprised. And I don't know if you guys have seen this in, you know, opportunities you've worked over the years or anything like that. I think I've seen this in one place where you have this hybrid role of person who can speak tech, who can speak operations, who can speak business, and they kind of manage almost like project management would be, but like, yeah, a very specialized way.
Now,
is that what the title is? They're called architects.
Lord knows.
I don't know what the name is, right? But somebody who can manage all that, because especially one of the things in the book, The Phoenix Project, is someone who can understand the DevOps process and how that could impact, you know, rolling out changes, or how do we monitor this appropriately? Where would this possibly rear its ugly head if there were an issue rolling out? But somebody who understands all that and can speak all that, I've only seen that in one particular opportunity. I worked with a customer and they were priceless to have on that conversation. But I definitely don't see it enough. But to your point, there normally isn't somebody who knows the impact of the business and what that would be. Yeah. Or the trending out when that's going to happen or anything like that. You just don't see it.
And I think that, like, within our organization, like, obviously it's going to, depending on what your business does, that role might change on who that person is. But, like, to me, that's like what a product manager would be at, you know, at Logic Monitor, right? Mm-hmm. I should know a use case and, you know, persona based requirements for what it is that our customers need. But I also should know, based on the folks developing features and functionality, what the impacts that might have on the product, right? Same thing when it's like, you know, switch it to a business, right? Retail, right? You're going to have folks that own certain projects and things within the IT landscape. They should be able to connect the business side back to the downstream technical folks that are, you know, building and deploying shit.
Right.
But yeah, that is a crucial role, right? Because there's often, you know, those barriers that go up, right? You kind of have everyone off in their silo doing their thing. A lot of times that is invaluable information that doesn't cross, you know, business units. So yeah, having somebody in that role to kind of liaison that responsibility,
that's right,
is how you don't miss a step, right?
And that's exactly it. And you're going to alert. You're going to have issues. You're going to have downtime. It's more, again, the observability conversation of, I mean, and what is, you know, marketers, you want to call it, the observability today is supposed to be like logs, metrics, traces, right? And now we are throwing AI into that mix in some fashion. So it's no longer going to be the three pillars or whatever. It's going to be fourth with AI. Is AI going to be part of observability moving forward?
I think it has to be honest with you. I think it has to, because like Steve mentioned, like the biggest thing that folks are really worried about now or really curious about is how are we using this data, right? What are we going to do with this data? And the whole observability concept is getting context around what's happening across all these technical pieces in my environment, right? So if you can help streamline that, you know, connect the dots for me instead of me kind of looking at all these items and coming to that analysis myself, but, you know, tossing me a bone to help me along the path. I think that's what folks are looking for, right? At the end of the day, it's all about saving time, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about saving time. It's all about getting to, you know, solving issues a lot quicker. And the way you do that is by not only by collecting data and having metrics and having the data, but the context around that data.
Yeah, I think
I was going to say, how many times have we had maybe in a past life as an engineer or with people we work with now and help where, you know, they suddenly start getting an alert and they're like, huh, what's this? And that alert's been triggering for months or even years, right? And they're like, mm-hmm. once they remediate it, an issue that's been recurring for Lord knows how long just goes away, right? So it's all about mm-hmm. like that context, right?
That's true.
I totally forgot what I was going to say. I had something. I had something brewing. I forgot it.
No.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, let me ask you guys a question then, I'll put this on the table. So let's say, let's pick a business. So you're a financial company, got offices all around the world, and you need to, and you're, let's say you're a hybrid cloud and on-prem model. With a front-end interface to all of your customers.
This isn't a mock demo, is it? Or
this is a full mock demo. You're going to be graded at the end of it. Everybody's going to put in chat what your score is at the end. What do you do to observe? I mean, what do you... I'm not saying specific tools or something like that. I mean, are you doing traces? Are you doing all the things to get visibility?
I think it depends, right? Because partly to what you guys were alluding to, the first thing is to understand the business impact, right? So what applications cause the most loss of revenue, loss of functionality, loss of people being able to do their job? Identify those things and then take it from there in terms of, well, what is required in order for me to have closed as many gaps in visibility as possible? And then you slowly work your way back until you've essentially covered the real estate that you can, right?
Quick question.
Go ahead.
So we talk about, like, why? I'm just curious. Why focus on the applications that have revenue tied around? Just curious. Like, for the everyday viewer, like, why is that even important?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, right, I can't pay my employees if I ain't got money. Right. The same concept applies anywhere else. If you all goes back to your case with that you had mentioned, right? With the hurricane came through and they're like, hey, how are you? When's email coming back up? Right. Because that's a function that affects a lot of people and affects their ability to do their job, which ultimately has some sort of revenue impact to the business. Right. So, as you know, rudimentary as email is these days, there's applications and things that are going to support your business, whether it's, you know, I'm a retail shop and I have an online, you know, e-commerce platform. If I'm not making money, then I'm essentially like, I don't do anything other than sell, right? So I am not making a single dime. That's a key application, key platform. But if I'm doing something else and I have, you know, I'm a global company and I do 18 other things, then that impact might not be as great because I've kind of spread my risk in terms of how the company makes money. Same thing from a technical standpoint, right? So it just depends on what the company does, how they make money, and how they support themselves, and take it from there, right? I mean, I want to obviously not have people call me and tell me something's broken because IT is a thankless job, and, you know, the more you don't get acknowledgement, the better you are at your job. So you want to identify those things and keep those lights green so, you know, people don't come knocking.
It's a very interesting point. Go ahead.
Yeah, speaking of keeping the lights green, question. All right, so we all know IT is a thankless job, and I'm happy you brought that up, right? So because I had a buddy who happened to. All right, say you got an observability tool, it's doing all the right things, the lights are green all the time. 12 months go around, time to renew on the tool.
Yes.
No problems have occurred in the year because it's doing its job, but now they're like,
we
hey,
need it.
What do we need it for? I've actually
That's a very good point.
Folks come across and lose really good tools that saved the day because the company was unable to acknowledge that no problems happened because they had observability in place.
And that's something we see regularly, right? There are large budgets put into building out infrastructure, that level of complexity we talked about, all the front end, the redundancies. And then there's this tiny, tiny budget put towards monitoring it, which is still mind-blowing, right? When you talk about the percentage between the budgets and what have you, whereas if to your point, great, everything's green. I've had those conversations, and you said it was a buddy of yours, right? I've had those conversations where budget time comes up, and I say I need $100,000 for this, whatever it's going to be, and they go, "What has it done for us?" Like, keep us running. I don't know. Keep us up. We haven't had alarms. Things have been nice and quiet. We're doing what we're supposed to do. They're like, yeah, get something smaller because it's obviously too complex. We don't need to do everything it does. Right. And it's a mentality out there that'll drive you absolutely insane. But those budgets, I don't know. It's almost like they're just not kept in the ratio of where everything else is kept. That's an interesting point.
Facts.
Yeah, but yeah, I think when it comes to observability and going with the example earlier, whether financial company, whatever it is, and mind you, we talk about this. I know I do it probably on a good number of my demos and walkthroughs with different customers. Is that one view that shows you outside in, right? That front end. Connectivity all the way down to the network supporting it and the storage layer and all that stuff and everything in between, and really give you that full observability view of all of that complexity, the traces, the logs, everything in a nice little single view. And then I would still have probably a couple of point tools out there to do it, right? Because there's some things that not every tool is going to do really well. And I think we're very focused on, I need that Swiss Army knife, but you're not going to get that Swiss Army knife to cut that tree down. So you're going to have to diversify a little bit. Is that kind of what you guys are seeing out there as well?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, especially with like OEM vendors, and they make their own, purpose-built tools that are supposed to monitor their stuff very well, Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to do a better job at monitoring themselves than we would or another tool would. But right. That's not to mean that that's the only thing that you require, right? Because like to your point, you might have an issue with that particular piece of hardware as a result right. of something upstream or downstream that manifests itself as an issue. I don't know how many times I've been, working in a NOC or something where it's like, all of a sudden I can't reach, file share or something like that. Go to find out, oh, somebody changed the firewall rules, right? Didn't manifest itself as a network issue. My network tool ain't going to tell me that something's wrong, but it ended up having a downstream effect. So like point tools are great when you need to do like that deeper level of, hey, I know there's a problem. Let me go in here and actually maybe look under the hood and see the database calls that are happening in my application.
That's a great example.
All right, well, there's 16 other changes that happened in the environment over the course of that, issue. Maybe one of those is probably related to why you're seeing a problem.
And what is that SQL? Is it Spotlight? Is that what it's called? What's that one SQL deep dive? And it looks at all the...
I think Spotlight is one. There's like Redgate and some other tool. I mean, there's a bunch of tools out there that
do. And I think that's a perfect example of what you're talking about. You already used the database as the example. Is there's stuff those tools will do that you will be able to follow and trace a query all the way through. It's going around the entire database and coming back out again. You're not going to find an everyday tool that does that. I mean, that I should say an all-in-one tool that does all that stuff. It's just not a thing. And if it was, good Lord, that'd be, you that'd know, be crazy cool. expensive. It'd be pretty wild, though. I mean, everybody tries to get their own components and, oh, we can do this module, we could add this. It's like, you're not going to do what a spotlight does, but you should definitely have that to highlight, you know, other issues you're seeing in your other tool. Yeah. But yeah, so the point tools still exist.
So absolutely. With that being said, so like Steve, you mentioned like OEM tools, obviously those vendors have their own tool to, you know, monitor, provide observability around whatever you purchase. But is there like, I guess, moving away from OEM, is there any like, I guess, like open source tools out there that you guys have seen in the marketplace that provide that enterprise visibility or observability, as we've been saying for the last hour?
I mean, there's tools out there, right? I mean, you think of the Grafanas of the world, right? I mean, those traditionally were visualization tools that were meant to be an agnostic, you know, receiver of information to let you come and centrally query something. You know, that's evolved, obviously, as that's gone to become an enterprise product. And, you know, they have their, you know, arms and a bunch of different other avenues besides just monitoring now, right? They do security and, you know, CI/CD monitoring and other stuff. But my biggest thing with open source, especially, you know, ones that are completely free, is you're betting your money on a product that is essentially, you know, supported by a community of people that have no interest in, you know,
like
your personal, you know, requirements and capabilities. So yeah, as a small business or somewhere that I'm like starting out and I need something to get up and running with, like I can understand relying on an open source tool. You know, at the bigger company, you know, obviously you look at all the, like, you know, you got to have a support contract. You got to have all, who am I going to call when I need somebody on the, you know, on the line. You know, obviously there's open source tools that have that kind of mentality and capability, but I don't know.
I mean, if you're going into a hospital and you see they have Big Brother running, I'm pretty sure you're going to another hospital, right? I mean, it's, I don't know. I think that's right. Small business, I'd even say some medium businesses, depending on maybe what industry you're in or what have you, I think could certainly benefit from some of those open source utilities. I think, though, the vast majority of companies today that are now so IP and internet focused and now cloud focused, you're getting a little more overly complex, because the one thing we all know about this, some of the open source environments, they're just not optimized, right, for enterprise for sure, for scale. But I think, yeah, small business, I would certainly jump right into that. And then I would probably end up blowing like most do, as if they grow to the point of medium and going up bigger, then yeah, you're looking at growing your solution. Of course, probably on the smaller budget on the side of things, but we won't go into that again. But yeah.
Yeah. And it also depends on, you know, do you have a dedicated observability team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Large enterprises, sometimes it's, you know, it's a side job for six or, you know, five or six people, right? The network guy, the server admin, you know, hey, maintain our monitoring tool. Great. Are they going to go and roll an open source tool and start this care and feed and do all this stuff to it?
That's a good
point. Probably not. But if you have a very sophisticated company, you know, we talk more about like those like stage three, stage four customers that like their IT staff is generally developers and like DevOps persona people, they may opt to do that because it gives them more free rein to customize it and do things that they probably can't get out of a enterprise product that is meant to solve many different use cases, not necessarily their exact use case, right? That's where I see open source fitting in, right? You look at like, you know, a company like SpaceX or something like that, that has like a very unique
use case for observability, right? They're monitoring telemetry data from rockets going into space, and they're trying to monitor a million different pieces of information. They probably need to roll their own or use something open source like a Grafana or another tool that's out there that they can extend beyond its, you know, initial purpose. So there's need for both. I think it just really depends on what the business is, and essentially who's going to support it, maintain it, and, you know, all the, there's a bunch of different factors, right, that would kind of come into play. Me personally, I'd build it myself, right? Because that's just who I am. But is somebody going to pay me to do that? Probably not. So then I'm going to go with the next best thing. What can I buy that gets me as close as possible?
I was going to say, everything's driven by money, ain't it?
Yeah,
it is. And it's funny, too, when I said before small businesses going open source, I was just thinking about it. Again, I put myself in that seat, and I got to remember to, you know, zoom out a little bit, right? Because the simple fact of it is, I mean, I have a little bit of a technical background. How many small businesses have the technical people to spin up, you know, that kind of monitoring solution, open source or what have you? I don't know how many small businesses have that, but I know, to your point, if I were doing it, yeah, I'd probably be doing something on my own. I'd be getting some Linux operating system out there, throwing in my own little monitoring solution and calling it a day until I get to a little bit of complexity. I'm like, all right, we're making a couple of bucks. We'll buy something.
Yeah,
you totally would build it yourself, Steve. And you probably put it on GitHub for everybody else to use for at no cost. But
the world works.
But yeah, I mean, from an observability standpoint, I think we kind of ran the gamut from where we initially started, at least in our, you know, starting our careers in the space, to today. It really is going to be traces, it's going to be logs, it's going to be metrics, it's going to be a level of, now we won't have to get into it too much here, but AI and generative AI, and whatever you want to call it, because I know there's some discrepancies between the two, that some people blur the lines, but nonetheless, I think generative AI is going to be a very big deal in the observability space over the next, 2 to 3 years. Definitely now, it is definitely emerging. Everybody and their mother has to have anything with AI.
Yeah,
I think, though, with more investment going into it over the next year, especially, we're going to see, I think, a lot of changes in the observability space with generative AI becoming more of a thing.
So with that being said, like, so with Gen AI, man, everybody and their mothers use Gen AI, right? They got a wrapper, and the way it's kind of manifesting itself is every solution, every platform, SaaS or what have you, has some sort of summary feature now, right? Hey, we'll record, we'll do it, and you don't got to do anything. We're just going to give you a summary of it all.
Well,
Gen AI. Is that level one? Because it feels like it.
To an extent, I would think.
It feels a little bit annoying.
It feels a lot like that, right? So that's the argument that a lot of people have, the differences between AI, whatever you want to classify that as, and generative, right? So if you're using it as a learning model, and it is learning your environment and learning all these things and then generating predictions and all these different algorithms through it, you're kind of going through that. But if you're kind of saying, give me a summary of the metrics over the last 24 hours, is that generative AI, or is that just something reading some data and spitting you some output? I mean, I'm curious on your guys' thought on that, because it is a very gray area for people.
I think it's still generative AI, right? Because if you look at how it works under the scenes, right? I mean, generative AI, basically, it has some sort of data it's been trained with, and then it basically just creates one word at a time, right? It can only think one word at a time. Right. So that's how sometimes you end up with contradictions and things that don't make sense, because it kind of talked itself into a hole and it's basically trying to like dig itself out. You know, as we start having the ability to like self-train models, right? I mean, think about these companies have been the last you know, 5 or 6 years building these huge data warehouses with all their, you know, customer centric data and things that they need to make, like, you know, decisions on, you know, what our trends look like, seasonal, you know, hotspots, things like that. When we can start to plug that stuff in and have it learn based off of that and give us data based off of information that's relevant to us and not just what a company decided to go, oh, we changed, you know, GPT 4.0 on, you know, how to do better coding. Great. Mm-hmm. But can it code in my style using my code base as reference, doing all this other stuff that it currently does? That kind of stuff, I think, is like the next logical step, right?
Great.
Self-trained models with data that's pertinent to the questions that we're going to ask it so that it can hand me back, you know, summaries and look at trends and do all that kind of stuff. But it's still generative, right? It's still just based off of info that was fed and using it to come to some sort of a conclusion. But it could be super helpful, right? Because somebody doesn't have to go and run a Looker report and try to, you know, figure out all this information. It knows that because it's already kind of processed and figured out what the, you know, the data is it needs to extract.
No, that's true. And I really think it is going to be the, I mean, right now you're getting different generative components that you're seeing introduced into the observability space. But to your point, something that can use everything, all the data that you're modeling, that you're pulling over time, and model that into some sort of, whether it's an AI summary, whether it's, you know, trending out when something's going to be an issue and having it just provide you a text model that explains, you know, hey, we noticed this is happening. We might want to check out this, this, and this. I think we're a couple years away from that. As we build up different components of generative AI within these different observability tools, but that's going to be wild. That's going to be exciting to see, is that not just a human looking at the generative, you know, all the alerts coming through and how that trends out and what it does, which we still need. Even after the generative AI piece is in there, we're still going to need somebody who's in, you know, into the environment to understand what it's saying and being able to work through it. Because a lot of people are like, oh, Gen AI is going to get rid of my job. And I'm sure in some scenarios that is true. However, in our space, you still need to read it, interpret it, and explain it to others and get it fixed, right? You still need that component for many years to come. But I'm very curious to see, as our podcast will still be running for 2 years, referring back to this episode, to see where it is today.
Yeah. That'd be cool if we could get to point out and say, hey, we called it.
You heard it here.
That was it.
Our 15 subscribers are now aware.
You know what, what's funny is, I don't know, I've started to use a product called Cursor. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's basically like Visual Studio Code, but it lets you plug in like GPT Copilot. It lets you plug in GitHub Copilot, Claude, if you use that one. And you basically let it index your entire code base. I basically let it look at all my files, index it, and then I can use that when I'm getting suggestions for like what I should be typing in. I want to create like a unit test or something. And all I have to do is tell it, I want to make a unit test based on this function that I have. And it will go and create the entire thing for you using all of your reference data, your comments, your things like that. And that's where I see like that next phase. Like once you can actually like understand the data that you need to have it focus on, then now you're just much more efficient.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, that's really cool. We gotta talk about that a little bit.
It's cool. I just started using it. It's pretty. I think I've pretty much ditched VS Code at this point.
Wow.
I mean, it's pretty much VS Code. It's you know, they cloned it and changed it around, but it's really cool.
That's cool. I mean, that would be a great future podcast, right?
Sit and watch Steve code.
Watch Steve develop. Yeah, I'm pretty sure
we can. Our next episode, paint drying.
I think we could do that. But no, I appreciate you guys' insights on where you think it's going to go, because I am quite curious, in being as gray-haired as I'm getting now, seeing all the changes that we've gone through historically. It's going to be pretty dope over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think as like GPUs and things get much more efficient at processing this stuff, so the price comes down.
All based on,
then it will open up. All these other companies are going to come out with all sorts of fun stuff. Right now, like you said, it's just wrappers, right? It's take the stuff, wrap it, because we can't really do it on our own. Like I heard X, right? They just had a 100,000 GPU farm stood up to do their own model training, right? Yeah. So everyone's jumping on the bandwagon, right? How they're going to leverage it will yet to be seen, but like, as prices come down, it'll be moving quicker in that regard.
That is pretty wild. Matter of fact, that's the first time I've ever heard a conversation where Twitter was not mentioned. It was only X.
That's cool that you said X. It's cool. I still call it Twitter, but
I never had a Twitter, so
X. I've been on Twitter since the beginning days, so I refused.
Yeah, no, it's great too that you just said I never had a Twitter. So I think that sums up that. Yeah, no, I had Twitter for too long, but. I just can't bring myself to call it X, but that's another whole comp. Yeah.
That's a whole podcast topic in itself.
It really is.
We might have to get Joe Rogan on.
Yeah, oh, God.
Where's X going?
Yeah. 30%, was it 70% less of the company now? Isn't that what it was? It's down to like 30% of the original employee count. And I think Elon's answer was, turns out you didn't need that 70% to run it. I was like, okay. But I think that does kind of wrap it up for the conversation on observability, unless you guys had any final thoughts.
No, I don't.
I don't think so. No.
No, but I was queuing Kurt to go.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, no thoughts on observability, but you can like and subscribe.
And if you want to come on our podcast as a special guest and you have something to
come
talk
on,
about,
we're looking for some people to talk shop with. Right. We don't bite.
You don't even have to be shop. We'll talk about Scientology. We'll go anywhere.
Oh my God. What a callback to the pre-show. But yeah, so again, that's kind of where we see observability as it's been, where it's going, and actually where it is today. But again, there's always comments. We will look at those if you guys want to set me and be able to see if we can even use those as topics next time. So I guess that'll kind of wrap it up for episode 3 of Pulse Check.
Awesome.
Thank we'll you, catch guys you guys for joining us
on the next one.
It's been fun.
See you guys. Peace.
We're plugged in, can you feel it? It news, we're gonna reveal it. From the servers to the cloud, we're breaking it down, showing you how. Tech trends, what the edge, Pulse Check. The Scorpio Pledge, keeping you updated, never